Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, July 1st, 2022. Section A. Panel discusses higher education enrollment by Matthew Stringer. Citing a significant drop statewide in student enrollment in higher education institutions, the Texas Tribune CEO Evan Smith led off of a panel discussion Thursday at Odessa College, sharing how three West Texas education leaders were selected not because their respective institutions reflect the statewide decline, but rather because their institutions were seeing increases in student populations contrary to the statewide trend. Joining Smith in the discussion included Greg Williams, president of Odessa College, Sandra Woolley, president of UTPB, and Scott Murray, superintendent of ECISD. Setting the stage for the discussion, Smith shared statewide statistics on student higher education enrollment, highlighting how the state has seen just over a 13% drop in community college enrollment and a 4% drop in main four-year institutions. However, the performance in West Texas institutions does not reflect this decline. The news in this region is actually better than the news in the Texas in Maine, said Smith. And part of the reason we wanted to come here is not because you're emblematic of the decline, but because apparently something is working here that's not working elsewhere. Woodley described how UTPB experienced about a 5% increase in student enrollment. And while she says last year the school lost around 375 students, this year the officials are seeing an upswing of about 11%. Woodley accredits a five-year effort to entice people to attend the new Falcon Free program, where students with limited family resources can get their tuition paid for and other outreach programs. Shifting to Williams, Smith pointed out how community colleges historically represent the majority of the higher education population in the state and opened the floor to Williams to explain how Odessa College is managing to cut against the grain by seeing higher student growth. Williams said when he started at Odessa College, the institution had 4,000 students and the college has seen record growth each year, including during the pandemic, and broke 8,000 students for the first time this past fall. Williams explained that in 2011, Odessa College had a defunding scare, and school leaders decided at that time they would never remain in a position to rely entirely on the legislature for funding. Asked about the college-going culture before the pandemic versus today, Murray said the culture was on the rise, which he attributed to the collaboration with other institution leaders on the panel. Murray went on to state that ECISD officials determined that at least 70% of their students need to have one of four forms of post-secondary credentials, including a degree, technical licensing, or military experience. Murray added that the key is reaching that 70% goal and is creating a culture within the student populations that look toward post-secondary education goals. He explained that in partnering with both local higher education institutions, students at the district could become a part of those institutions through dual credit and enrollment opportunities. He cited a variety of statistics on post-secondary education in Texas among young adults, including how Texas is only second to California in adults ages 24 to 35 that do not have at least an associate degree. Woodley addressed these statistics, focusing on the underperformance in West Texas by citing the need in the growing energy industry for a workforce that requires a higher level of education and skill sets. Smith then shifted the conversation back to the legislature, prefacing his next question to the education leaders by mentioning recent actions by Dan Patrick in making the Senate Higher Education Committee a subcommittee, mentioning Patrick's interest in ending faculty tenure, and then asking whether they felt that the legislature understands the importance of higher education and whether the legislature respects it. Williams responded by saying he doesn't know how the legislature feels, but that it's his job to make an impression on the legislature while focusing on their students. MISD's Ramsey hires ex-boss, Stuart Doreen. With Deputy Superintendent Greg Cuellar leaving Midland ISD, Superintendent Angelica Ramsey decided to make a change to the leadership structure at the District Service Center. Ramsey told the Reporter Telegram this week that she made the decision to create a flatter organizational chart, spread some of Cuellar's duties to Associate Superintendents Charles Garcia and Luis Martinez, and hired Miguel Serrano as the district school improvement officer. In this role, Dr. Serrano will oversee MISD's Achievement Zone, Schools of Choice, and System of Great Schools work. Achievement Zone schools are those where students receive higher levels of targeted support to increase student outcomes and close gaps. They include lower performing schools in terms of campus achievement and campuses where targeted student subgroups receive support. Serrano comes to Midland from Las Cruces, where he has served as the Chief Operations Officer this year and Chief Human Resources Officer for the past 5 years. Before that, he served as a teacher, assistant principal, principal, and director of human resources during more than 20 years at Socorro ISD in El Paso. As a campus principal at Socorro in 2010, Serrano led a team of educators to turn around the school from not meeting adequate yearly progress for years to being the only 5A exemplary high school in West Texas. He is passionate about school turnaround work and looks forward to bringing his experience to Midland. Serrano holds a doctorate from UTEP in teaching, learning, and culture. He also has ties to Ramsey. She was an assistant principal at Socorro and a member of Serrano's team during the turnaround at that campus. Ramsey said Serrano's work in Midland will really be specific to those schools that need the most help. MISD made the announcement in June, and Cuellar has accepted an executive leadership position in Spring, which is located in the Houston area. Midlanders head into fourth, paying less than state average for gas. Midlanders are paying $1.35 more for a gallon of gasoline heading into the July 4th holiday compared to 1 year ago. The organization shows that drivers in Midland are paying an average of $4.38 a gallon, which is the 13th lowest average of the 27 larger metropolitan areas. This week's report shows that the current average in Midland is 14 cents lower than the record set on June 11th. AAA Texas also reported that the average in Midland was down 8 cents compared to a week ago. That decline was 3 cents less than the 11-cent drop statewide. The organization also reported that more than half of the metropolitan communities reported a weekly decline of 10 cents or more. Despite gas prices being $1.69 more per gallon compared to last year, Texans will travel by car in record numbers this 4th of July. The increase in volume due to pent-up demand for travel will put more pressure on demand for fuel, the organization reported. It's occurring as supplies remain tight around the globe for crude oil and refined products. While gas prices have been declining during the past 2 weeks, it's possible they could reverse course and begin climbing again in July. Midland Habitat dedicates house number 178. On Tuesday, Midland Habitat for Humanity dedicated its 178th house to a deserving homeowner. The home was funded by the Permian Basin Area Foundation and the Mariah Foundation. Midland Habitat is one of the premier institutions responsible for constructing affordable housing in the Permian Basin. The organization's partnership model offers deserving, hardworking families a hands-up. Habitat uses a rigorous qualifying process that includes progress from the application through home ownership. Each participant contributes a minimum of 350 hours of sweat equity on the worksite and completes a home ownership education program. Successful candidates are then awarded a 0% interest mortgage, making home ownership a reality for some of the neediest families in the Permian Basin. Anyone interested in supporting Midland Habitat efforts in the Permian Basin can contact Jeff Myers at 432-686-8877. Midland Habitat for Humanity is a Christian-based nonprofit organization that builds homes for low-income families trapped in substandard housing. Homeowners make house payments to Habitat with a 0% interest 25-year mortgage. These house payments go into the fund to build more homes. For more information, visit HabitatMidland.org. HEB beats out Amazon and Walmart as top U.S. online grocery retailer. HEB narrowly bested Amazon and its Amazon Fresh subsidiary, as well as its chief rival Walmart, as the top U.S. online grocer in a new study from Dunnhumby. The UK-based customer data science firm said San Antonio-based HEB edged out the online behemoth in a near statistical tie in its new e-commerce retailer Prefex Index. HEB's impressive performance proves that it's possible to compete and win against Amazon when it comes to grocery commerce. Their success offers midsize and regional retailers a roadmap on how to succeed online. Walmart came in fourth, and its Sam's Club chain was fifth, followed by Kroger, BJ's Wholesale Club, and Sprouts Farmer Market. HEB took the top spot because it had the highest level of emotional connection to customers and online share for wallet or how much of their grocery spending goes to a specific company. Early in the coronavirus pandemic, more HEB customers shifted to purchasing their groceries online. They increased their spending by 27%, giving HEB the highest share of wallet online in the study. The HEB partners pour their passion into making us the best omni-channel retailer, spokesperson Daya Kempos said. We're honored with the recognition and thank our customers for continuously believing in our mission. Dunnhumby based its inaugural index on a statistical model informed by an online survey of about 3,000 households that shopped online at least once in the 30 days before the survey. 54 retailers were scored on a range of preference drivers, emotional connection, and e-commerce performance. It also evaluated web traffic, share of wallet online, and online penetration of a grocer's total customer base. Retailers that rely more on their own apps and websites have a clear strength compared with those that use intermediaries, such as Instacart and Shipt, because they have more control. Customers also value ease and reliability when deciding where to spend their money online. HEB has steadily invested in its digital operations. The company started offering curbside pickup in 2015 and has since expanded the option to most of its Texas stores. HEB acquired Favor Delivery in 2018 and doubled its coverage area statewide in 2020 during the pandemic. Betty Ann Coffey passed away peacefully on June 28th. Funeral services for her will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 2nd, in the Heartland Funeral Home Chapel. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, July 1st, at Heartland Funeral Home. Juan Miguel Marquez passed away on June 26th. Funeral mass will be on July 1st at 10 a.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, July 1st, 2022. Ring in the 4th in downtown Odessa. A parade is also planned on Monday to celebrate. Firecracker Fandango is back and will celebrate the 4th of July early on Saturday with numerous events and a fireworks show. Firecracker Fandango is scheduled 6 to 10 p.m. Saturday and is a free event with games, food, and market vendors. Quote, we're just so excited, end quote. Downtown Odessa Director Casey Hallmark said, quote, we're really eager to have this event. It's completely free to the public, and we're just fortunate to host this and have it be free and hopefully have a good turnout, end quote. Firecracker Fandango will feature 15 food trucks as well as alcohol vendors and over 25 local market vendors as well as a car show, circus performers, face painting, and performances by Rick Trevino and Tommy Tarango. Battle of the Bands will also be going on at the Ector Theater at 6 p.m., which will be a $5 admission to anyone older than 12. A main stage will feature Tommy Tarango and Rick Trevino. The Odessa Animal Shelter will also have a booth with adoptable pets, and the Ellen Noel Art Museum will provide a free children's craft. Jumpers and rock climbing walls will also be available, as well as a car show. The event will be complete with a 15-minute fireworks show. The fireworks show will take place at the corner of Grant and 2nd Street and will start at 9:45 p.m. On Monday, the Downtown Lions Club has scheduled a parade and a Let Freedom Ring event. The parade starts at 10 a.m. and will begin at 17th Street and Grant and travel south down Grant to end on 9th Street. The American Legion will host the Let Freedom Ring event with music, vendors, and food trucks. That event goes from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Getting students back in higher ED. Education chiefs tell of bucking trends. Stressing innovation, cooperation, and hard work, presidents of Odessa College and University of Texas Permian Basin, along with the Ector County ISD superintendent, talked success and struggles. Held in the Zant Community Room at the Salisbury Campus Center at OC, the occasion was the Texas Tribune's Great Student Resignation. Speakers were OC President Gregory Williams, UTPB President Sandra Woodley, and ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray. Texas Tribune co-founder and CEO Evan Smith was the moderator. It was in person and live-streamed. Bucking the trend of declining higher education enrollment, Woodley and Williams noted the hard work of faculty and staff, quality virtual instruction, and retail politics, getting out to students and families to let them know it's the right time to be in higher education. Topics also included the college-going culture in this region and the state, what the pandemic in year three did to enrollments in four-star schools and community colleges, and to the progress that the state's public school districts have been making in getting their young charges to think about higher ed, quote, as the logical next step on the journey to become our future workforce, our future voters, and the future stewards of our democracy, end quote, Smith said. At the beginning of the pandemic, Woodley said UTPB saw an increase of about 5% in its enrollment. Quote, last year, we lost about 375 students, but this year, we're on a pretty significant upswing. We have about a 27% increase in student credit hours at this point compared to last year, and about 11% in enrollment. So there are a lot of factors for that, end quote, Woodley said. Quote, for us, we put in 5 years of hard labor, really organizing our processes and our scholarships and optimizing every single thing that we can do to convince the people in the Permian Basin to come here. I think most recently the Falcon Free programs that the University of Texas system funded is you make $100,000 or less, you can get your tuition and fees covered right at UT Permian Basin is another factor, end quote, Woodley added. Asked if UTPB employs wholesale and retail politics to get people to attend UTPB, Woodley said it's both. Quote, for us, that human touch is really crucial for us, to be able to get out in the community and spend time in high schools and spend time at the community college. We really have to meet people where they are in the Permian Basin. But the overall brand awareness of the university and the advertising and the social media strategies have been crucial too. Pre-pandemic, Smith said community colleges represented more than 50% of higher education enrollment. Now that percentage has dropped just below 50% during the pandemic. Quote, we all expect it will go back up. And the trend is what I've said, 13% or so. 13.2%, I believe, is the drop in community college enrollment statewide since 2019. But you've cut against the grain, end quote, Smith said. Williams said the secret to OC's success is the faculty, staff, and community. Quote, this tremendous community, my partners here, we at Odessa College, we've been on a mission for a long, long time, trying to do amazing work, end quote, Williams said. When he started at OC, there was a little more than 4,000 students. Quote, last fall, we broke 8,000 students for the first time in our history, which was a tremendous thing for us to do, end quote, Williams added. During the pandemic, he said OC has increased enrollment roughly 17.5% to 18%. Williams said, what's different at Odessa College compared to others is the culture. Quote, I think part of that culture started in 2011. We had something that we call the defunding scare, end quote, Williams said. They decided they would not be in that position again, quote, so others can do what they do, but we're going to be amazing. We can't control what the legislature does, end quote, Williams said. Murray has been superintendent at ECISD for 3 years. Quote, the college-going culture, I think, was on the rise, and I would really attribute some of that to the colleagues that are on either side of me today, end quote, Murray said. He added that he, Williams, and Woodley worked collaboratively. Quote, but we think P20... pre-kindergarten through college, I think as a community, we understand the value of the opportunity, end quote, Murray said. In Texas today, Murray said, 70% of jobs require some form of post-secondary credential. Quote, we talked to our students about that. Even throughout the pandemic, we had those same conversations. So that means that our kids, at least 70% of them, have to have some form of post-secondary, end quote, whether that is a 4 or 2 year degree, some form of technical certification or service in the military, Murray said. Quote, so we have to create that culture within our elementary, middle schools, and high schools that, again, feed these two institutions. It's also partnering with both of these individuals. We have programs in place today that allow our students to become a part of them while they are with us. So you're a high school student and you can leverage opportunities at Odessa College or UTPB to experience dual credit, dual enrollment opportunities. Again, that plants some seeds in the minds of our students. It certainly helps them think more broadly about opportunities beyond that. End quote, Murray added. Smith said there has been a 4.1% drop in enrollment in higher education overall since 2019, 13.2% in community colleges. Quote, but another way to cut those numbers is that the enrollment in higher ed fell 5% over the decades before COVID in Texas, and then dropped another 6% in 2020 alone. So another way to think about that is there's been a 53% increase in non-enrolling high school students since 2010, which is extraordinary, end quote, Smith said. Quote, currently, only 1 in 4 Texas 8th graders graduate with a post-secondary credential. Only 1 in 4 get a credential by age 24, and among economically disadvantaged kids, it's double that. It's 1 in 8, end quote, Smith said. He added that 54% of jobs in Texas are middle-skill jobs, which means they require more than a high school diploma but less than a bachelor's degree. However, only 45% of Texans are trained for those jobs. 61% of Texans don't have a post-secondary credential. Those with a high school diploma, only 13% earn a living wage, Smith said. Quote, only California has more young adults ages 25 to 34 without an associate's degree or higher. Texas is second worst in the country for that. California is the worst, end quote, Smith said. Woodley said she and her colleagues here recognize that they are underperforming in the sense that college-going trends aren't as high as they need to be in the Permian Basin. Quote, for the knowledge-based jobs that are here today and the ones that are rolling in, the Permian Basin is producing 50% of U.S. energy. That's only going to go up. Look at renewables and all the things that are going on here. Occidental announced that they're going to have the largest carbon capture facility here in the Permian Basin, end quote, Woodley said. Quote, I think all of us feel the urgency to convince people to think about going to college after high school, to get them involved at some points and get them going. I myself am the person who took 10 years to get my undergraduate degree, worked full time. I have lots of colleges on my transcript. Most of my students, in fact, 55% of our students are part-time, and I don't consider that a failure when you can make $100,000 a year driving a water truck. I'm not going to disparage you for doing this, end quote, she added. Woodley said very few of her students are first-time, full-time students. Quote, if you look at the graduation rate and persistence rate at the first-time, full-time freshman, for example, we have less than 500 out of 7,000 students who started as a first-time, full-time freshman. Most of what we do is to support students who have been in the community college or who have some college and no degree, stopped in and stopped out. I think our challenge is to destigmatize that, end quote, Woodley said. She added that almost half of UTPB students are first-generation college students. William said about 60% of his students are first-generation as well. Murray said House Bill 3 made a, quote, remarkable dent, end quote, in pre-kindergarten through 12th grade funding. Quote, public schools across the state of Texas have been very appreciative of that and responsive to that. But investments in public education and higher ed must continue as the world continues to evolve. And if we want Texas to truly create and produce students that meet the workforce needs, then investments need to be made, end quote, Murray said. Woodley said the public health emergency that was COVID was challenging. Quote, I think we came through the challenge very well. I think all of us did. You don't know how things are going to go until you're in the thick of it. But we flipped very quickly to virtual learning, very high quality virtual learning. But the pandemic took a toll on our students, our faculty, and our staff. All of the uncertainty, the changes that had to happen to make the experience for the students continue to have high quality, was challenging, but I think we did very well, end quote, Woodley said. Woodley, Williams, and Murray said the COVID experience made them stronger. Quote, ultimately, it made us better at what we do. It prepared us more for the virtual environment. We were already moving in that direction. Our faculty members were prepared. We have a really good team at the Professional Learning Center where we had started to do more things virtually. So the pivot was a lot easier for us. Our faculty, again, is always developing and improving their skills, end quote, William said. He added that OC stayed on the job. Quote, we never went away. We never closed our doors. We never stopped. We continued to support our students. For those people who are doing front-facing work, we couldn't do that anymore. We pivoted them to a support environment where they were reaching out and helping to keep students in class, end quote, William said. OC was also virtual, but they stayed open in terms of staff. Murray noted that there was no playbook for dealing with a pandemic. He was standing on the streets of Marfa when he got a phone call from Texas Education Commissioner Mike Morath saying they would probably have to close school for a couple of weeks. He came back to town and they opened school that Monday in a completely virtual environment. Quote, there was no plan, and so it was a whole lot of collaboration, pulling really smart people together and learning from them and figuring out how to move forward. And we did it and created that playbook and have experienced success because of that. But it wasn't easy. There wasn't anything to refer to, and it affected our kids and our adults in a variety of ways. We learned a lot through that experience, a lot of things that have made us better today, so we're very thankful for that. The resiliency of our kids was impressive, the way that our staff and faculty responded and created solutions that had never been created before. So kudos to all of those people, end quote, Murray said. Guyana, Suriname draw big oil interests. ExxonMobil, other major companies deep into offshore developments. One of the hottest new oil fields in the world, if not the hottest, is the offshore Guyana-Suriname Basin, where ExxonMobil and a host of other companies are working nonstop to develop it. PBEX Resources Chairman Wes Perry of Midland says the initiatives, quote, will have an impact on the world market for sure, end quote. If ExxonMobil's projection of almost 11 billion barrels of oil in just one section of the basin off the northeast coast of South America pans out. Quote, that's huge, and it's refreshing that that many major companies are working in that area, end quote, Perry said. Quote, but the world needs 100 million barrels a day, and it won't help that much to drive the price down if Guyana, Suriname only supply 2 or 3 million BPD. I don't know anyone who likes $150 a barrel oil. From a consumer's perspective, it's a real hardship, end quote. ExxonMobil spokeswoman Megan McDonald said from Irving that her company has made three recent discoveries of the very desirable light sweet crude oil in the 6.6 million acre Stabroek Block 120 miles offshore from Guyana. Total Energies of France, Qatar Petroleum, Chevron, the Hess Corp, Satsoli, the National Oil Company of Suriname, CGX Energy of Toronto, CNOOC from China, Shell, Petronas from Malaysia, and Apache and its holding company, the APA Corp, are also working in the area. With Venezuela to the west and Brazil to the south, Guyana and Suriname had been two of the poorest countries in the world. Guyana encompasses 83,000 square miles and Suriname 64,000, with respective populations of 786,000 and 587,000. Their capitals are Georgetown and Paramaribo. Guyana does not as yet have a national company. APA spokeswoman Alexandra Franceschi said from Houston that her company's, quote, leading position in Suriname since 2012 and its five discoveries in the last 2 years provide strong evidence that the basin has the potential to be a significant new source of lower carbon intensity oil production in the years to come. We continue to explore, appraise the discoveries made, and invest in the region with plans for long-term development, end quote, Franceschi said. McDonald said 11% of the conventional oil discovered in the world since 2015 has been found offshore from Guyana. Quote, during the pandemic, when others were scaling back, ExxonMobil and our co-venturers continued investing in developing the opportunity in Guyana, helping the country to become an oil exporter in 2020, end quote, she said. Quote, we recently increased our estimate of recoverable resources in the Stabroek Block to nearly 11 billion barrels, and keep in mind that many parts of the Guyana-Suriname Basin remain unexplored, end quote. McDonald said her company's Barrel Eye No. 1 well was drilled in 3,840 feet of water, encountering 230 feet of oil-laden sandstone, while its Patois No. 1 found 108 feet of hydrocarbon-bearing sandstone upon drilling in 6,315 feet of water, and its Lucani No. 1 discovered 115 feet of oil-bearing rock after drilling down 4,068 feet. ExxonMobil upstream company president Liam Mallon said those funds, quote, and the updated resource estimate increased the confidence we have in our ambitious exploration strategy for the Straybrook block, and they will help to inform our future development plans for the southeast part of the block. Quote, ExxonMobil remains committed to delivering value at an accelerated pace to the people of Guyana and our partners and shareholders and reliably supplying affordable energy to meet increasing demand around the world, end quote, Mallon said. He reported that the company's two sanctioned projects, the Liza Destiny and Liza Phase 2, are pumping 350,000 barrels of oil per day, and a third project, the Payara, will yield 220,000 BPD when the construction of its floating production storage and off-floating ship is completed late this year. The company's Yellowtail project will start producing 250,000 barrels a day in 2025, Mallon told the Odessa American. Searching for book club members. Odessa High School graduate Matthew Thompson, also an incoming Harvard University student, is searching for a group of 8th to rising 10th graders interested in reading classical works in philosophy and political theory. Dates include July 6th, July 13th, July 20th, and July 27th. Meetings of the book club will be at 2 p.m. in the library at University of Texas Permian Basin. Contact Matthew_Thompson at college.harvard.edu for questions. He has selected Plato's Republic, Machiavelli's The Prince, and Thoreau's Civil Disobedience. Quote, we'll discuss these works in a roundtable style and inclusive space for inquiring and interrogating ideas. Peers can expect new forms of understanding what it means to be human within the context of modern social and political issues through contemplation and revelation. I interacted with these selected works far too late in my junior year. I was introduced to them, fortunately, by the passionate Mr. David Newman. My intent is to invite younger peers with a desire to know into a novel atmosphere, inducing critical thinking and epiphanies, unable to be recreated in an ECISD classroom that values standardization and testing curriculum, end quote, Thompson said in an email. Midland doctor selected to serve at Leadership Consortium. Padmajit Patel, MD, DIP ABLM of Midland, has been named among 34 other senior leaders from National Quality Forum member organizations who have been selected to participate in its 2022 Leadership Consortium. Patel has been a practicing internist in Midland for nearly two decades. Patel currently serves as the medical director of the Lifestyle Medicine Center at Midland Health and has been an advocate for offering a variety of comprehensive lifestyle intervention programs under physician supervision. Patel serves on the board of American College of Lifestyle Medicine and is vice president of the Midland Quality Alliance, a clinically integrated network of physicians. She is a member of the National Quality Forum's 2021 Leadership Consortium and a founding member of the advisory board of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine's Health Systems Council. Patel serves as the chair of the Patient Care Subcommittee of ACLM's Health Systems Council, as well as ACLM's Clinical Practice and Quality Advisory Panel. Patel has been awarded the prestigious status of Fellow of ACLM for her outstanding achievement in the field of lifestyle medicine. She co-founded Healthy City, a nonprofit organization to raise awareness of the benefits of plant-based nutrition within her community. The Leadership Consortium is a prestigious and exclusive forum of multi-stakeholder healthcare experts representing NQF member organizations, where they share their collective thought leadership to identify actionable strategies to improve healthcare quality and drive lasting changes in key areas. The group's guidance informs the direction of NQF programs and drives improvement across healthcare. To strengthen the Leadership Consortium's impact for broader system improvement, NQF has modified the way its expert guidance will be put into action this year and in the future. Healthcare leaders will focus on identifying one top healthcare quality priority to serve as a springboard for an implementation collaborative in which Leadership Consortium participants will pilot test strategies for improvement over a 12-month period. The phased approach and creation of the implementation collaborative is an addition to the 2022 structure to maximize impact. Quote, to achieve meaningful change, operational learnings and quality measurement need to be inextricably tied. The addition of the implementation collaborative of the Leadership Consortium is not only critical, but a unique multi-stakeholder opportunity to pilot promising strategies, which in turn will inform prospects for driving impactful change, end quote. Leadership Consortium co-chair Rena Desaja, MD, MS, senior advisor, Office of Assistant Undersecretary for Health for Quality and Patient Safety, Veterans Health Administration, said. The group will hold its first meeting in July. During this meeting, the members of the Leadership Consortium will discuss six urgent issues in the current healthcare landscape, including the collection and use of social determinants of health data and the improvement of patient safety in ambulatory care settings. The group will prioritize one topic as a focus area, then collectively identify and recommend improvement opportunities to be tested during the implementation collaborative throughout 2023. Quote, we have been gathering feedback from our member organizations to elevate the impact of this forum. They are eager for the opportunity to maximize their contributions to continuous improvement within the field, and it was encouraging to see their overwhelming enthusiasm in the high volume of applications received. We are looking forward to working with this stellar group of national leaders to drive meaningful change in healthcare, end quote. Dana Gelb Safran, SCD, President and CEO, NQF, said. Quote, NQF has become an integral component of American healthcare's efforts to improve the safety, quality, and efficiency of care delivery, end quote. Leadership Consortium co-chair Peter Angood, MD, President and CEO, American Association of Physician Leadership, said. Quote, the Leadership Consortium continues to address significantly important topic areas by identifying the issues of concern and then providing actionable solutions and next steps for helping to refine approaches on these various topic areas. By doing so, the Leadership Consortium itself is now becoming an important and influential group within healthcare, end quote. Other esteemed members of the 2022 Leadership Consortium are co-chair Peter Angood, MD, FRCSC, FACS, MCCM, FAAPL, President and CEO, American Association for Physician Leadership. Co-chair, Rena DeSaja, MD, MS, Senior Advisor, Office of Assistant Undersecretary for Health for Quality and Patient Safety, Veterans Health Administration. Girma Alemu, MD, MPH, Public Health Analyst, Health Resources and Service Administration. Ashrith Amarnath, MD, MS, SHCD, Senior Medical Director, Covered California. Jane Brock, MD, MSPH, Medical Director, Federal Health Solutions, Telegen. Betty Chu, MD, MBA, Senior Vice President, Associate Chief Clinical Officer / Chief Quality Officer, Henry Ford Health System. Dan Kulika, MD, MA, PhD, Senior Program Specialist, Texas Health and Human Services Commission. Mary Dittry, DHA, FHELA, FACHE, Vice President, Community Health, New Jersey Hospital Association. Eileen Esposito, DNP, MPA, RN, AMB-BC, CPHQ, Board Member, Nursing Alliance for Quality Care. Shelley Fold Nasso, MPP, CEO, National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. Susan Gaffney, Executive Vice President of Membership, Development and Events, National Health Council. Sean Griffin, MD, FAAFP, President and CEO, URAC. Hillary Hatch, PhD, Chief Clinical Officer, Phrygia. Amy Helwig, MD, MS, Executive Vice President, RTI Health Advance. Diana Joles, PhD, CNM, Quality Liaison, American College of Nurse-Midwives. Robert Jones, MD, Interim Associate Chief for Value-Based Operations, Cleveland Clinic. Lauren Kirk, PharmD, CPHQ, CAE, Senior Director of Strategic Partnerships, Pharmacy Quality Alliance. Danielle Lloyd, MPH, Senior Vice President of Private Market Innovations and Quality Initiatives, America's Health Insurance Plans. Julie Malloy, OTD, MOT, OTR/L, PMP, CPHQ, FNAP, Director of Quality, American Occupational Therapy Association. Amy Minnick, MHSA, CPC, RN, Associate Vice President, Innovation Operations, Geisinger Health System. Sarita Mahanti, MD, MPH, MBA, President and Chief Executive Officer, The SCAN Foundation. Dustin Nowoski, MD, Founder and President, OutCare. Ravi Parikh, MD, MPP, Senior Clinical Advisor, Coalition to Transform Advanced Care. Carol Payton, MB, CHB, MD, FRCA, FFICM, MPH, Executive Director for Clinical Quality, Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. Jade Perdue Pulley, Acting Deputy Center Director, Center for Quality Improvement and Patient Safety, Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Rebecca Perez, MSNRN-CCM, Senior Manager of Education and CMSA, Foundation Executive Director, Case Management Society of America. Kanan Ramar, MBBS-MD, Patient Safety Officer, Mayo Clinic. Daryl Roberts, PhD, MSRN, FHIMSS, FAAN, Principal Scientist, General Dynamics Information Technology. Kristen Russell, MD, MBA, Associate Vice President, Clinical Transformation, Humana. William Sigmund, MD, MHS, FACC, FACP, Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer, Becton Dickinson, BD. Samantha Tierney, MPH, Senior Scientist, Clinical Policy, American College of Physicians. Jennifer Van Meter, PharmD, Director, Healthcare Association Engagement and Innovation, Novartis. Ronald Walters, MD, MBA, MHA, MS, Associate Vice President of Med Ops / Informatics, University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Mike Woodruff, MD, Chief Patient Experience Officer, Intermountain Healthcare. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/2EKFMETH or qualityforum.org. First Lady Abbott celebrates winners of Keep Texas Beautiful Awards. First Lady Cecilia Abbott recognized on Wednesday evening the 10 winning communities of the 2022 Governor's Community Achievement Awards during her keynote address at the Keep Texas Beautiful GCAA dinner in Austin, a press release detailed. Quote, preserving the undeniable beauty of Texas would not be possible without the hard work and dedication of communities who strive to improve and safeguard spaces across our state, end quote, Abbott stated in the press release. Quote, today we celebrate these communities' diligent efforts to create and maintain beautiful, clean environments for future generations of Texans to enjoy and make memories that last a lifetime, end quote. 2022 GCAA winners. Category 1, population up to 3,000, Salado. Category 2, population of 3,001 to 5,500, Richwood. Category 3, population of 5,501 to 9,000, Lucas. Category 4, population of 9,001 to 15,000, Woodway. Category 5, population of 15,001 to 25,000, Katy. Category 6, population of 25,001 to 40,000, Canyon Lake. Category 7, population of 40,001 to 65,000, Grapevine. Category 8, population of 65,001 to 90,000, Rowlett. Category 9, population of 90,001 to 180,000, Allen. Category 10, population of 180,001 and above, Irving. Believing that philanthropy is at the core of what it means to be a Texan, First Lady Abbott has actively promoted volunteerism and service to others and continues to inspire Texas to help others in their communities through her signature Texanthropy initiative, the press release stated. Since 1985, Keep Texas Beautiful, in partnership with the Texas Department of Transportation, has awarded the prestigious GCAA to Texas communities for their outstanding overall efforts to keep their communities beautiful. GCAA winners are selected for their ability to engage citizens, local businesses, schools, and other organizations in environmental improvement initiatives and result in a landscaping award from TxDOT, with the prize amount based on population size. The funds are used for landscaping projects along local rights of way. OC Tech's Valedictorian presented with Student Hero Award. OC Tech's Valedictorian Ashley Moncaro added another award Thursday with the presentation of the Student Hero Award in the boardroom of the Ector County ISD Administration Building. Mancaro, who graduated from OC Tech's in May, was one of 15 students to receive the award from the State Board of Education. Each of the 15 elected State Board representatives selects one student from their region to receive the honor, a news release said. The District 1 representative, Georgina Perez from El Paso, selected Mancaro. Her name was read as part of a resolution at the SBOE meeting in Austin on June 17th. ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said the awards identify students that go above and beyond the call of duty to be recognized for the work that they've done, giving back to their communities and making a difference in the lives of students, families, and the entire community. Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said Mancaro is a hardworking student who thinks of others' needs and takes the initiative to make things happen. Quote, Ashley earned this recognition for her many community outreach efforts, not only here in Odessa, but also in her hometown of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Her projects range from helping the homeless with hygiene packages to advocating for women in abusive relationships through volunteer work at the Crisis Center, end quote, Adkins said. Other examples include organizing a drive to collect feminine products for low-income families, women in shelters and fellow students, visiting children in the hospital dressed as a superhero, or delivering pizza to those kids to brighten their day. Quote, those are places adults often shy away from, but not Ashley. She is continually looking for ways to make the community better, and she tackles problems head-on. I would like to add that school district leaders and her campus leaders feel this title is very, very appropriately named Student Hero, and she is. We're proud to join the State Board of Education and District 1 Representative Georgina Perez in recognizing Ashley with this award, end quote, Adkins said. Murray said Perez sent her regards Thursday. Quote, in fact, she and I talked about you. She was very impressed with your story and the work that you've done and expressed that to me, end quote, Murray added. And Kara said she wasn't expecting the award because they sent it in March and kind of forgot about it. She added that she didn't realize what an honor it was to receive the award. Quote, I'm really honored and I'm excited because maybe it helps others to be inspired to do this, end quote, Mancaro said. She added that giving back is something that was expected of her and her five siblings. Quote, my mom and dad specifically, they're always telling us, help out if you can. They set the example, end quote, Mancaro said. She added that her mom would always try to donate when she could to help others, and that stuck with Mancaro. When you recognize problems, she said, it's good to do something about it. Quote, that way you feel like you're contributing, end quote, she said. It might be intimidating or scary at first to volunteer, but Mancaro said it gets easier. Mancaro will be attending Bowdoin College in Maine on a full scholarship. She added that she plans to study psychology, but she's going to decide what route to take. Mancaro hopes to continue the project she was doing here in Maine and maybe take on some other issues. Council hands out funding requests. Various Odessa groups asked for more than $4.1 million in grant requests from hotel, motel tax funds, and the Odessa City Council went through those requests to hand out funding on Tuesday. The council gave out $3.1 million to the organizations, including $75,000 to the Odessa Black Cultural Council, which had asked for $200,000, $5,000 to Brazos Communications, which had asked for $25,000, $50,000 to the Commemorative Air Force, which had asked for $50,000, $450,000 to Downtown Odessa, which had asked for $450,000, $15,000 to Junior League of Odessa, which had asked for $20,000, $450,000 to Odessa Arts, which had asked for $450,000, $1,100,000 to Discover Odessa, which had asked for $1,144,550. $80,000 to Discover Odessa Sports Events Recruiting, which had asked for $125,000. $35,000 to Odessa Jackalopes Hockey, which had asked for $71,161. $5,000 to Odessa Lynx, which had asked for $15,000. $15,000 to Odessa Parks Fall Festival, which had asked for $65,000. $136,000 to Odessa Parks Starbright Village, which had asked for $180,000. $130,000 to Permian Basin Fair and Expo, which had asked for $150,000. $65,000 to Ratliff Ranch Golf Links, which had asked for $96,609. $150,000 to Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo, which had requested $150,000. $30,000 to the Tejano Super Show, which had requested $92,575. $50,000 to UTPB Athletics, which had requested $260,000. $40,000 to WTTC, AAU National Qualifier Meet, which had requested $50,000. $50,000 to the West Texas Track Club, which had requested $55,000. $40,000 to the White Pool House, which had requested $152,680, $75,000 to the ME Productions, which had requested $150,000, $15,000 to the WTX Indoor Football, which had requested $20,000, $50,000 to the Ector County Coliseum Interlocal Agreement, which had requested $50,000, $32,599 to administrative costs / audit fees. From the general fund, the city council also allocated $50,000 to the Children's Miracle Network, which had requested $50,000, $60,000 to Odessa Crime Stoppers, which had requested $60,000, $90,000 to Permia Care, which had requested $90,000, $68,960 to Odessa Teen Court, which had requested $68,960, $20,000 to Young Professionals of Odessa, which had requested $41,750, $30,000 to Michelle Esparza Ventures, $10,000 to Junior Jacks Hockey. Tarango ready to return to Odessa to perform. Tommy Tarango isn't new to the Odessa Midland area. San Angelo native country singer, who's traveled all over the Southwest performing at numerous different gigs, will be joining Odessans in celebrating the 4th of July at Firecracker Fandango. The event will take place at 6 p.m. on July 2nd in downtown Odessa. Coming back to Odessa, he's always enjoyed a big audience in the Permian Basin in previous trips. Quote, "I'm really excited," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "I'm looking forward to having a good time with everybody out there. I'm always excited to perform for everybody in the Odessa Midland area. Every time I get to go there, it's exciting to sing and perform," end quote. He's performed at both private and public events as well in Odessa. The support he gets in the area is his favorite part about singing in Odessa and Midland. Quote, "The people are really nice," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "It's always a good time. I do a lot of weddings and quinceañeras and birthday parties. The crowd out there is always excited to see me," end quote. Ever since he was 5 years old, Tarango knew he wanted to be a musician. It wasn't until he was 9 years old when he started playing guitar. Quote, "I've basically been doing this all my life," end quote, Tarango said. He comes from a line of musicians in his family, including his grandfather, Thomas Tarango, and his father, Thomas Tarango Jr. Quote, "Music's been in my family for a long time," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "My grandfather and my dad were the ones that got me started in music. My grandfather helped me learn how to sing and play guitar. I've been in the music business since I was little," end quote. Tommy Tarango has been fortunate enough to be able to play at the famous Grand Ole Opry at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. Quote, "That was an awesome experience," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "I was really excited, and to get to perform out there was a different experience. A lot of big artists like Johnny Cash have had the privilege to perform on that stage, and to get to perform on the same stage as the stars was a big deal for me," end quote. Tarango said he performed at the Grand Ole Opry when he was only 14 years old as part of a talent contest. He graduated from San Angelo Lake View High School in 1999. Over the years, Tarango has been performing at numerous gigs all over Texas and New Mexico. Quote, "Basically, every weekend I'm booked up somewhere," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "Probably half of the year I'm on the road. I'm on the road nearly every weekend, so I'm doing hundreds of shows or 200 shows," end quote. He'll also perform in other places around the South. Quote, "Pretty much wherever they call me, we'll go," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "The other week they wanted me to go out towards Aransas Pass. We've traveled everywhere. I've been to Nashville and Atlanta and Mississippi," end quote. Tarango travels to different places with his family. Quote, "That's the neat thing about it," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "We all travel together. I get to see them not just during the weeks, but also the weekends. We stay together pretty much all the time, so that's a big plus," end quote. Tarango has two kids, son Austin Cash Tarango, 7, and Leslie Ann Tarango, 6, and a wife, Jeanette Tarango. Both of his kids are starting to pick up singing and are wanting to perform on stage just like their dad. Quote, "They're catching on pretty quick," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "I can't wait to watch them perform on their own someday. We're working with them on singing and playing instruments. They love the music business too. They're following daddy," end quote. Tarango writes most of his songs, but he'll also do some covers of rock songs as well. Quote, "I'm planning to release an album next year of all the songs that I've been writing," end quote, Tarango said. Quote, "I'm just writing, and I've done some cover songs like Empty Glass, originally by Pete Townsend," end quote. "I went in and redid it. It's a good song. It's one that I get requested all the time. That's the reason we recorded it. I'll be releasing a few more cover songs to the public. Next year, I'm looking at doing all original songs on an album, end quote. When it comes to writing music, Tarango says he'll sit down and try to write about fun stuff and the other things that people will go through. Quote, I just sit down and put everything in one picture and try and go from there, end quote, Tarango said. Quote, I'll try to make it fun. It's a neat experience because you get to write not only about you, but also you also get to write about other people and what they're going through, end quote. While he still sings mostly country, Tarango says his style of music has changed a little bit over the years. Quote, when I started singing, it was all in English, end quote, Tarango said. Quote, it was all country, but the more that I started doing shows, especially around the Odessa, Midland area, people started asking me about doing Spanish music, so I started doing some Tejano and mixing it up a little bit. Next thing I knew, my business was taking off. That's what keeps me very busy. I don't just sing in English, I also do Spanish, and that gets everybody going, end quote. He's excited to get the opportunity to play with Rick Trevino at the Firecracker Fandango in Odessa. Quote, I hope everybody comes out and has a good time, end quote, Tarango said. Quote, I'm looking forward to performing with Rick Trevino. I grew up listening to him in the 90s. It's great to be able to perform with him. I'm looking forward to seeing a great crowd, end quote. Downtown Odessa Executive Director Casey Hallmark is also eager to have Tarango return to perform, as well as Trevino. Quote, we've had Rick Trevino on the hook for 2 years, end quote, Hallmark said. Quote, we've been trying to get him out. To have him finally able to come is exciting. We really wanted someone more local for our opening act, and that's why we turned to Tommy Tarango. We're excited to have both out here, end quote. For more information about Firecracker Fandango, visit tinyurl.com/YHU2H9RF.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.